That's certainly true, but by the same time, such men also don't have time to be attending the lectures of Plato or of Socrates. What I'm getting at here is that there is a temper, a quality to the Greek culture of the classical period that we've been exploring, and it is an aristocratic culture, it is an aristocratic temperament, one that is concerned with what the ideal aristocratic man should do with his time and with his behaviour. And it does seem to me that the kind of homosexuality that we seem to have evidence for in the Greek world is a socially constructed behaviour that is located primarily in this elite class. Now, whether or not every other Greek male bought into this, I don't know. I think it entirely possible that many other Greeks thought that this was peculiar and, in fact, was something that was only done by men who had way too much time on their hands. But it would be a mistake, I think, to extrapolate from this and to make extravagant claims about homosexuality in the Greek world. That is to say, when people ask me, what did the Greeks think about homosexuality, I find it difficult to give a straightforward answer, because it is a particular behaviour of a particular group, and I think one that involved many conflicting attitudes. You remember that I started by talking about the Theban sacred band, pointing out that Philip had said, these men did nothing dishonourable. Okay, perhaps he was valorising their behaviour, but by the same token, his remark would make no sense unless somebody had said those men were guilty of bad behaviour. So there were conflicting attitudes at work here. Just as there were conflicting attitudes about homosexuality and about the right way for a man to behave, so too there were conflicting attitudes about women. And what I'd like to do now is turn aside and talk about the different ways in which the Greeks thought about women. It would be nice if I could do this from the point of view of Greek women, but almost without exception, our sources are men. And so we are largely in the uncomfortable position of trying to recreate the experience of women in Athenian society by using what is said about them by men. Very unsatisfactory position. How unsatisfactory this is, I think, is made clear straight away if we think about the earliest references that we have to women in Greek literature. If you think about Pandora, for example, in Hesiod's poems, you find a woman who is a punishment given to men in order to retaliate for the fact that men have managed to steal fire, thanks to Prometheus. So the gods have been tricked into letting us have fire. Fire is what will make civilization possible. And what is the punishment that we get as a result of having civilization? It's women. That fundamental attitude is going to underpin a great deal that the Greeks say and think about women. If you think about the position of women in the Homeric poems, it's very difficult to understand, to move from Homer to a real society and to say what the range of attitudes may have been. But consider that on the one hand, we have Penelope, the ideal woman, the woman who Odysseus spends 20 years trying to get back to, a woman who is loyal and waits for him. But everything about Helen is matched, everything about Penelope is matched by Helen, the queen of Sparta, the wife of Menelaus, the woman whose perfidious nature was responsible for the Trojan War in the first place. So once again, we have a far too neat antithesis. Women as what caused the war and women as what make the war worth fighting. The most extreme version, however, of a range of opinions about women is to be found in the poems of Simonides, who composed about 650 BC. And in one very famous poem, he relates the different tribes or types of women that exist all over the broad earth. And in this poem, Simonides likens the different type of woman that he has met to different types of animals, so that there is a mare woman. And just as a female horse is proud and haughty, so this particular woman is proud and haughty and not very nice to know. There is the bitch woman, and like a dog rolling around in the dirt, she too rolls around in the dirt. There is the vixen woman, who is off having sex with the neighbour if the husband isn't watching carefully. There is the sow woman, who, like a female pig, is grovelling around and is disgusting to be around. I read this poem often, or excerpts of it, to an undergraduate class. It's quite a long poem. And at the beginning, when you first say, and then there is the sow woman, or then there is the mare woman, people will laugh. There'll be some nervous laughter. And normally, by the time you get to the end of the poem, the laughter has stopped. There is no doubt it is one of the vilest poems ever composed, and yet it remained popular through antiquity. It touched upon a deep-seated misogynism in Greek culture, a deep dislike and distrust of women that is absolutely there throughout Greek culture.